morning, good afternoon, good evening, everybody. This is Tony, and you are listening to On the Couch, Full Britannia Edition. And as always, I'm joined by my co-host, Dazza. Dazza, how are you doing today?
I'm doing very well, thank you.
Excellent. All right, now if you notice, this wasn't on the comic couch, and this wasn't like our last special edition where we did on the wrestling couch. No, like I said in the intro, this is On the Couch, Full Britannia Edition. Now, Dazza, explain to everybody what that is.
Well, aside from the On the Comic Couch articles that I do, I also write other things as well. And one of the things that I have started sort of quite accidentally, actually, is a series called Full Britannia. Mm-hmm. And in this, I basically come up with some of the more wacky side to the UK culture.
That's putting it lightly.
Yeah, that is basically out there. And it's just kind of, it sort of started where I think I was talking to a friend who was in America, and we just got talking about sort of, you know, weird things, you know, about this country. And I thought that it just might be, you know, and she was basically sort of telling all these sort of stories about some of the things that we're going to be talking about. She was kind of like really amazed by it all and just like really fascinated. So I thought I'd do like one article for Half Guarded just to sort of list, you know, just, you know, quite a few. Just think I'd get like, a bit of a paragraph out of each one. Mm-hmm. And then I started one of them and I just started, you know, sort of looking into like the history of these things and what history of there is and just sort of all the little sort of quirks and everything. And I suddenly, before I knew it, I'd actually written an article just on one subject. And, you know, people seemed to like it. So I just started, you know, writing them. And Coughlin always basically says to me, you know, when I basically send them out, he sort of says, "You're making this one up, aren't you? you're making this up." You know, so it's sort of, you know, it's just a little thing that I've sort of got on as a sideline, and it's sort of, it's great because I was talking to a few friends of mine about these articles, and they were sort of saying, "Oh, you should do this, you should do that," and then I think that I always start to think that I've reached the end of these things. I think, well, you know, I can't come with any more. And then I'll sit down and think about it. And I'll sort of come up with another one that I just think, you know, people are going to like, you know, find this hilarious and stuff.
Oh, that is pretty funny. I like the way you started intro-ing at the beginning. Like, this is the country that brought us Shakespeare. And then, I forget what else you bring up. You started off with a motif at the beginning of it, and I thought it was kind of cute, but you kind of let it go by the wayside. Let's see if I can't pull it up real quick. I knew I should have wrote this down. Let's see. Oh, Britain has done great things for the world. We've given you Shakespeare, the Beatles, James Bond, the internet, and the chocolate bar. And for all this and more, you are welcome. That sort of sets you up because it's like, you know, you've brought up all these great things. Now here comes the receipt for all the things.
Yeah,
maybe we wish that we hadn't known about.
Yeah, I mean, these are a lot of things as well, which basically, you know, to be honest, quite a few of these, a lot of people in our own country don't know about them.
Wow.
Because a lot of them seem to take place in these sort of like little, like, you know, villages and everything. And they're just these like little customs. And one thing about a lot of these things is when you start reading and try to give a bit of history and background, a lot of them people don't really know how they started. they just sort of say that they've got like, you know, the earliest, you know, examples of when these things happen, but no one's really sure, you know, why they started or how they kept going. It's just like this kind of like this tradition, these things that it just sort of, you know, this is kind of what we do. And, you know, a lot of these things are sort of like, you know, like yearly events. They're not just sort of things that people go out and just sort of, you know, just do, you know, they're actually like organized events that people sort of travel to and sort of, like, you know, witness. I have to say, I have not actually witnessed any of these things myself.
Well, a couple of these, some of these you go into, you know, at length in the, your articles, your specific experiences with some.
Yeah. Well, one or two of the more national ones that take place, but so some of these only sort of take place in like, you know, one little village, you know, a year and stuff like, you know, so it's sort of, you know, they're quite rare, but the sort of things that, you know, they've been going for, you know, on for centuries, and they're sort of like, you know, they're part of the sort of like the more wackier side of our culture, shall we say.
You keep bringing up tradition. Let's talk about your latest article called Full Britannia, Looking at the Weird British Sports That Health and Society Forgot.
Health and safety.
Oh, I'm sorry. I bet society wish they had forgot about it.
Yeah, health and safety, just because I don't know if you have this sort of culture in the US, but health and safety is kind of like the, government, sort of watchdog type thing that goes around places and makes sure that things are sort of safe. But they kind of go to, they have a reputation for going to extremes. So they'll sort of do things like, you know, banning bouncy castles at children's parties and stuff like that, like a bit of a nanny state and stuff like that. But for a lot of these things that we're sort of going to be looking at, they just seem to have kind of just like, turned a blind eye that these practices go on.
Yeah. The closest thing I think we have to that is the CDC over here in America, the Center for Disease Control and Prevention. But it's nothing as far as, you know, they're not busting out, you know, busting up jumping houses or some stuff like that. So we at least have that over you.
Yeah.
Okay, so let's talk about the couple of the sports that you bring up in this specific article. I think the first one is already, we're going to start off with a bang. Shin kicking.
Yeah. I mean, this is one of these things that you've kind of got to see and to sort of realize how sort of like, rough and dangerous looking it actually is. And if you actually look on the article, you can actually see a shin kicking competition. Going on. And if you'll notice as well, that it's actually a guardrail. That's because this thing actually does get quite a sizable people watching. It takes place at a place, the biggest event takes place at a place called the Cotswold Olympic Games, which is actually spelt differently to regular Olympics. That's so that we can actually avoid getting sued by the actual official Olympic committee.
Now, normally I would think they're overstepping their bounds, but for something like this, they don't want their name on at all.
No. Although, but believe it or not, you know, the Olympics are very, they're a bit like Disney in America, where it's sort of, you know, basically anything which will have anything associated with Disney, they will come down on. The Olympics are pretty much the same. Trust me, I found that out during the London Olympics. But anyway, shinky kicking is basically, pretty much, what it sounds like.
I was about to say, it's not a euphemism for something. It's literally what it's called is what it is.
Yeah, it is shin kicking. You basically get two people. They basically grab each other by the lapels of their coats. We always wear smocks. And then they basically just start kicking each other in the shins. until one basically submits. and there's not much more you can really say about that, but that is just how it goes. And they actually, they're allowed to stuff straw down the trousers, down the legs of the trousers, try and cushion a blow. But if you actually watch one of these, you know, competitions, when they actually connect with these kicks, you know, the crowd that's watching will sort of give out a because it is a real thud. I mean, this is just sort of like a little kids kicking game. These are sort of, you know, grown men absolutely going to town on each other's shins. And it is, and they keep going and basically till one, basically does like a version of a tap, which is, they just basically, the tradition is to yell sufficient, which basically means I've had enough.
That's so English for them to say sufficient.
Sufficient, yeah. Yeah. And this is actually a, you know, they actually do this in a tournament format.
Oh, God.
So they're sort of like, you know, they compete for about like, you know, three rounds of this competition. It's one of these things that there's not that much more that you can say. It is just called, you know, it is shin kicking. and that is it.
Wow.
Okay. Apparently, from what I gather, because we have a lot of these sort of sports, you tend to get like a personal, like, sort of come through and basically like have a long legacy of winning these things and become like a legend in baseball. We've seen kicking, it doesn't sound like there is that much, because once somebody's tried it, that's it. You know, they don't do it again.
I like that you use the term sports. I mean, I have to imagine, you know, you're using this quote with quotations and you're using it loosely.
With quotations, I mean, in its purest sense, it is basically one person competing against another. So it is technically a sport, you know.
All right. What's this next one here? I don't even know how to pronounce it. Dwile flunking?
Dwile flunking, yeah. I mean, this is one actually that I didn't actually know about. I came across it when I was actually looking up chin kicking. Because at the Cotswold Olympics, it gave a list of all these different, you know, activities that, that go on there. And one of them is Dwile Flunking. So I thought, well, I'm going to have to, look this up. And it's, and it is quite complicated because we use a lot of sort of terminology that I'm not even going to repeat. But basically, it's one of these sports that, It must have come out after a drinking session. I mean, what happens?
As I'm sure most of these sports did.
Yeah. the sport is that there's two teams, and one person from each side. They basically take turns to basically stand with the opposing team, like forming a circle, dancing around them. And the person in the middle, he's called the flunker, and he has like a thing of beer, like a keg of beer, and he puts in a flannel, which he then hoists on a stick. And what he has to do is basically he has to throw the flannel with the stick against the opposing side as they're dancing round. And he basically gets points. You get 3 points for hitting someone in the head, 2 points for hitting in the body, and then 1 point for hitting them on the legs. But if you miss, I think it's three times, and you have to basically drink a chamber pot, which is full with all the dregs of beer from the drinking session that takes place before we actually, you know, do this game. And they all get dressed up for this as well. They dress up in like sort of like really old fashioned rural straw hats and everything like that. A bit like sort of like a Morris dance. Actually, that's another one I could have included is Morris dancing. Have you ever seen that one?
No, I have not. You're going to have to describe that very quickly for me.
Okay. Morris dancing basically, it's probably the most well known of all these things. It's basically just like dancing around a maypole. Mm-hmm. We dance around like a maple, and then we also to have like bells on the feet, and they're also to like, and they've all got like two scarves, and they basically just like wave these things in the air and sort of like do like a formation type dancing past each other. Mm-hmm. And that's pretty much it. I'll have to do an article on Morris dance just to explain more what
things just write themselves. I mean, like you said at the beginning of this show, you're like, you know, at first you just wanted to write the one article, but one led to another, to another, to another, and now it seems like it's just a recurring gimmick, and you've already written like maybe six or seven of these already by now.
Yeah, I think I'm going to be writing these forevermore. But I think long after I've run out of comics to write about, I'll still be finding nutty things to basically, this could be the thing. I'll write a book and like go up and down the country actually visiting these places.
That'd be amazing.
but that is Dwile Flunking. It's just this like, you know, really bizarre sport. But there's one place in the country where it's there's this pub in Sussex called the Lou's Arm, I think it is. And they basically host other sports as well. They host one which is the pea throwing championships, where basically people pretty much, you know, throw a pea as far as they can. Mm-hmm. And then there's another thing that they do called spaniel racing, where they basically just race little dogs. But yeah, there's pubs up and down the country. There's another one actually. Mentioned pea throwing. That sounds weird. We also have a sport which is played quite an activity in the summer at pubs and that called welly throwing.
Wait, what?
Welly throwing. You know what a welly is?
No, that's something that's lost in translation.
Okay, a welly is a Wellington boot, are basically boots that people wear, you know, when it's snowing. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and Wellington is like the company that. You know, it makes sense. So basically whatever you sort of like, you know, put on when you go out snowing, you've probably got the equivalent to US. But basically, yeah, it's a competition to basically throw a welly as far as you can. And it's just called welly throwing.
And you see, alcohol's involved with these.
Oh, yeah, yeah. You will notice that when I mention these things, the thing that I mention is that most of them take place outside of a pub. That is sort of, you know, that is the common thing for a lot of these things.
I like that some of these have the penalty for not taking the game seriously.
Yes. You also have to drink. Incidentally, all these things that we're going to be going through, if you look on YouTube, you will find examples of these. I found an old newsreel, which was basically detailing Dwile Flumkin, which basically goes into, like, you know, extreme detail of how the game's actually, you know, show the game taking place. So if you're sort of, like, you know, interested in, and want to see these things, like, you know, for in action, you know, via, you know, the beauty of YouTube is that they are all there.
Yeah, if you can send those to me, Daz, I'll be sure to put them in the show description.
Yeah, sure, yeah, definitely.
Excellent. All right, this next one's even going to be harder for me to pronounce, but let's see if I can do my best. Strovetide Football.
Yeah.
Oh, okay, awesome. Yeah. Two for two today.
Yeah, this is this is an insane one. Basically, there is a in Ashburn in Derbyshire. There is basically a game that takes place on Shrove Tuesday every year, which is Shrove Tuesday is kind of like a traditional meal type based. Not so holiday, but just a tradition. Anyway, it takes place, and what it is a the north side and the south side of this village basically compete against each other in what is basically just one big, massive game of football. well, it's not so much; it's kind of more like a game of rugby.
Oh, okay,
and basically there are basically entire. Playing area apart from the cemetery is basically the entire village is basically the entire playing area apart from the cemetery. That's like off grounds. I think it's about 3 miles wide. There is a point between each one, like a goalpost that we've got to hit. And basically, it's just, the way I described it in the article is that if you imagine two different crowds from a rock festival coming together and basically competing against each other to basically get the ball to the other end of the pitch. And it just becomes one big, massive free-for-all. And it's just the most insane. I mean, there's photos on the thing. It's just the most insane looking sport ever. It basically just starts as one big, like, massive, massive crowd with a ball just trying to sort of, you know, get to the other end. And as it sort of goes on over 2 days. It's basically on Saturday and a Sunday. It's like an 8 hour playing time. And basically, after a while, you'll get your sort of, like, you know, most people sort of, you know, drift off and go. I mean, you'll get your, like, your hardcores it take. Part and they basically sort of are running through the streets and everything, battling against each other, and it's just like the most insane looking, like, spectacle you will ever see. It's a bit like there's a 2000 AD story called the Mean Arena.
Oh, nice.
Which was basically where two teams would compete, and the entire play area of a city would basically be open to this game, and it was like a gladiatorial combat and everything. And this is pretty much like that, except that it is basically, you know, open to the entire village.
Okay, that was the only one reading the article. I wasn't quite sure on what the game was, so I'm glad that I got you on here so you could go into detail about that.
Yeah, it is basically just, if you just basically imagine a massive, massive game of rugby that takes place over an entire village, and it goes insane because basically, you know, it will, you know, the match, because of the route that they have to take to get to, like, the, you know, the areas where the score the goal, it will basically, you know, end up in the river. So you basically have the two sides, like, trying to get the ball actually through the river and everything, like, you know, it's, again, it's one of these things you need to sort of look on YouTube to just see how absolutely crazy it is. And not surprisingly, there's very few goals actually scored in this thing because it is so, it does sort of, you know, take such a massive amount to actually sort of, you know, score a goal and everything.
Okay.
But we have to close the entire village down.
Whoa.
And board up the shops and everything for, you know, for this to take place.
Holy smokes. That's insane.
Right, believe it or not, there was one, because we sometimes get a celebrity to basically throw the ball into the crowd. And one year we had to abandon it due to flooding. So the year after, as a special occasion, we actually got Prince Charles to throw the ball into the crowd to kick it all off.
Wow, that's kind of cool.
Mm.
All right. Now, I think your final sport as a, in your sporting article, it's Eton Wall Game?
The Eton.
Ah, see, game. There we go. I was bound to mispronounce one of them.
Yeah.
So figures it would be the easiest one.
Yeah, Eton is basically a college. So I think it's just outside of London, and it's kind of like this sort of like elite establishment, you know, but sort of like the you can get in like on like a scholarship, but generally speaking, it's pretty much the sort of the wealthy that basically get to go there.
Okay.
And they basically created a game called the Eton Wall Game, and it's effectively sort of like a played against as you would think, against a wall. And it's pretty much like, you know, like a game of rugby where the idea is to basically get the, there's two teams and we've basically got to get the ball right to the other end of the wall to score a point sort of thing. Mm-hmm. And it's like it's between, I believe, the ones who are there on scholarships and then the rest of the actual, universities. So it's kind of probably like a bit of a class thing going on.
It's literally class warfare.
Pretty much. And it's done like on a really narrow, playing area. It's like, you know, sort of, you know, right against the wall. And it's so basically sort of cramped and rough and everything that you very rarely get any actual score. you get a point for basically getting the ball all the way into the other person's half and right up to the end of the goal line. But to actually score a goal from there, you've actually got to kick the ball and hit a target, like, you know, a real sort of distance away. Apparently the last time an actual goal was scored in one of the competitions was actually 1909 or something like stupid like that. So it's basically a, It's basically a sport that's been invented where it's pretty much guaranteed that most games are actually going to end in a draw. It's just, you know, absolutely sort of, you know, a pointless exercise.
Okay. From here, I think we're done with the loosely associated, maybe you could confuse them for sports. And let's go with the ones that are just completely out of this world as far as competitions are concerned. And this is sort of to get you warmed up for exactly what's to come. The first of which being gurning. Now, a lot of you are like, what's gurning? I've never heard of this before. In fact, I'm sure a couple of you are frequently typing this into Google trying to figure out what this is. But before they could do that, Dazza, what exactly is gurning?
Gurning is basically pulling a face. basically, what they do is they put like a horse bridle over themselves, which they use for leverage. So they grip that and then they basically pull a face. And the best way to describe it is it looks like you're basically trying to get your lower lip and jaw, over your nose. that is the actual, you know, and that is pretty much it. Cause I remember if you used to show these things on TV, when I was a kid, and we used to have these sort of like competitions when we have these sort of like, you know, it's like local programs where we're showing like, you know, weird and wonderful little sort of like, you know, festivals and stuff like that. And I used to see it and I used to think, what the hell, are they doing? And it's just impossible even to sort of like, to describe it. Again, it's one of these things that you have to see it. It's primarily something that sort of like older people are a lot better is basically because it's actually easier to do if you've not got any teeth.
I think you even described one person in the article purposely had their teeth removed so they can compete better at this sport or this quote-unquote competition.
Yeah. You do get that. I mean, with a lot of these things, you'll get people who basically sort of like, you know, they'll see it as like, you know, their one thing to shine at.
Yeah, if I can, you know, very briefly describe it to you, I mean, if what we're describing doesn't quite do it for you, it's essentially you're just making the most hideous faces you possibly can, and that's the competition.
Yeah, I mean, it does look like you are basically trying to basically eat your own face. But that is the only way I can actually describe it. and the article, it was one of these things where I started, you know, reading about it and stuff. And I found basically that there's a woman who basically she was kind of like, you know, the women gurning champion, one by the name of Anne Woods. Mm-hmm. And she like, you know, won the gurning championships 28 times.
I think she specifically mentioned Ronda Rousey. How while dominant as she was at her sport, this is nothing compared to her, right?
Yeah, yeah. But the thing is, she on the 27th victory, she actually ended up in hospital because she did a 4-minute gurn and she actually passed out.
Oh my goodness! Yeah, I'm doing a Google image search right now on Annie Wood. Oh my Jesus Christ! Like, if I can very sort of describe it to you, it's like they're making a Popeye face. That's the only thing I could describe it
as. That's it. Actually, now you've said it. Yeah, that is it.
Let's see.
Yeah, it is basically a Popeye face.
Let's see if I can further. Yeah, that's what it is. They're making a Popeye face. Okay, from here, let's go on to something equally absurd, if not more. I get the feeling this is going to be incremental. We started off with the things for pseudo sports. Let's go on to the next one. Cheese rolling.
Yeah, I mean, this is actually my favorite. And I think this was the one that actually kicked the whole thing off. It's an activity that takes place in a village in Gloucester called Brockworth. Now in Brockworth, there's this like really, really steep hill. Mm-hmm. I mean, if you actually look at it, it basically resembles like a ski jump. It's pretty much virtually just sort of straight down. And the idea of cheese rolling is that they get like a circular like block of cheese, a real large one. And everyone lines up right at the top of the hill. And then they send the cheese down, rolling down the hill. And then basically everybody runs down the hill. And the idea is to basically catch the cheese. Okay. This is actually impossible. So scientists have actually sort of, you know, have basically said that, you know, the momentum that once you send the cheese down, it's basically actually impossible for them to actually, you know, catch the cheese.
Oh, because I thought you mentioned the article that, you know, that there's been a couple instances where people have won. And of course, because there's no real award, all they do is just give him the cheese.
Yeah, yeah. I think they sort of have it, but basically the first person down there can, you know, is the kind of, you know, but the actual idea is to actually, you know, catch, you know, the cheese and, you know, before it gets to the bottom. But I think they basically come up with the idea that if you get the first person down to the bottom, you know, gets the cheese sort of thing. But the thing is, because it's this like hill is so sort of steep, as they sort of run down, most people sort of get about like 3 or 4 steps and then just basically fall.
Yeah, because this isn't like, you know, it's a 45 degree hill where, you know, there's some, you could maybe stop yourself from falling. No, this is almost a complete 90 degree vertical drop.
Yeah. Like, and it just is like an incredible spectacle because basically you just sort of, as everyone sort of runs down, you will get a few steps and you'll get the one person who manages to sort of like, you know, get a little bit of momentum. But for most people, they sort of go down and maybe they just start falling. And because it's so, you know, steep down, basically once they start falling, that's it. You know, they're pretty much, you know, falling all the way down to the bottom, just sort of like, you know, actually like bouncing down a bit like the sort of the barrels in Donkey Kong. It's just,
that's a good description as any.
Yeah. And again, you've kind of got to sort of, you know, see this. I actually do know, a girl who actually did do this.
Oh, did she wind up okay or did she break something?
She did hurt herself. Not massively. There was some, I think she was, cause she was a girl who she was like a Christmas temp many years ago. She's only a small girl, like, you know, I mean, she was in her sort of 20s, but she, you know, was quite a thing, but she wanted to have a go at this. And she did, I think she did her elbow or something like that. She didn't need like hospital or anything like that. She just sort of like, you know, spend it, but she, you know, she did sort of like, you know, hurt herself. But it is just sort of like, you know, the most insane spectacle. It is like something out of, what's that show? Is it?
Oh, you were saying
Jackass.
Yeah, in the article you referred to as Jackass. Yeah.
Yeah, it's pretty much sort of, you know, just like that. I mean, and there's always like an ambulance on the side waiting for them because, you know, generally people, you know, do get injured. But believe it or not, they have sort of like, you know, they did once, there was concerns about it, not so much for the people chasing it down the hill and falling and like, you know, sort of like, you know, cut, you know, injuring themselves that way, but that the actual cheese would hit, would get so, get so much speed that it would basically go and crash into the audience.
Won't someone please think of the cheese?
Yeah. So basically, for a few years, they did try it with actually like I think they used a sponge or something to represent the cheese, but eventually they sort of kind of basically just did away with that and just basically, you know, did the actual, you know, the whole cheese thing. But that was the only sort of like concerns that they had, was that basically it would go out of control and basically hit somebody, hit one of the spectators.
Just imagine someone saying, a foam thing? Now that's stupid.
Yeah. Why would
that's one thing too far.
Yeah.
This is a perfectly rational thing, but you're going to replace it with a foam? Like, cheese makes sense. Running, you know, trying to catch a cheese, wheel down a hill, that makes sense.
Yeah, oh, definitely. And again, it's one of these things that basically, you know, where it all came from and how it started and everything. It's just one of these things that, you know, people don't know. It's just something that seems to have been lost in the time, that at some point somebody came up with this idea and everybody did it.
I think you describe it perfectly in the article. You say it's like watching the running of the bulls, or like matadors getting gored. It's like you sort of feel sorry for them, but you know they did it themselves.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. To further up the ante, now, like I said before, with the shin thing.
The shin kicking, yeah.
The shin kicking. There's no euphemism to this. It's exactly what it sounds like. Ferret legging.
Oh God, yeah. This actually, believe it or not, is sort of, quite local to where I live, in a town called Barnsley. And this is pretty much, which is in Yorkshire. And this is something that basically sort of, you know, goes on, or has its roots in this area. And again, it's something that basically will take place at like country fairs, or will take place in pubs and stuff like that. And like it basically sounds like, you basically get a guy who basically, seals up all his sort of, you know, his trouser legs and everything. So he tears trouser, you know, to put string around his bottom of his trouser legs and everything. And then he takes a ferret and basically puts it down his trousers. And then basically sort of, and the idea of a sport is that you basically go as long as you can with the ferret in your trousers.
Now, you describe in the article, okay, this is not that big a deal. Like, ferret, whatever. It's a furry creature. I'm sure it tickles once it's in your pants and whatnot. But you describe in the article, no, this is no picnic.
No, because there's a, in the UK, we have, well, I think you call it as well, call them TV bloopers, mm-hmm. where stuff that's gone wrong on television, and TV shows and that. There's a really, really famous one. And again, this is actually from Yorkshire. There's a TV presenter called Richard Whiteley, mm-hmm. Who was a news reporter, and he did a live show where he was basically interviewing a guy who were talking about ferrets. And he basically had a ferret on his sort of, on his lap as he's doing the interview. And all of a sudden he just sort of said, ow, ow, ow. And basically the ferret got him by the finger.
Ooh.
And just sort of, and he sort of, and he's sort of saying, you know, the ferret's on the, and he's like basically gnawing into it. And the guy who is basically interviewing, he's kind of, you know, doesn't give a chuff, said, oh, it'll be okay, it won't hurt. And Mr. TV's presenter's on it, saying, no, it does. This really hurts.
And, sort of, and that's just him biting the finger on his hand. Imagine it biting the finger in your pants.
Yeah, exactly. these are not like little friendly like rabbits or anything like that, or little hamsters or anything. These are quite vicious animals. I mean, they're actually these are actually trained hunting animals.
Uh-oh.
Ferrets, you know, basically people sort of keep and tend to use them for hunting. So they'll take and they'll use them to like flush out rabbits from warrens and that sort of thing. So these are actual predators. And if you see the clip on YouTube, this ferret has got him by the finger. I mean, he's sort of like, you know, I mean, he shows a lot more restraint than I will, because if I this animal on my finger. I'd be sort of banging it against a wall trying to get it off. But it's easy to, you know, but this, you know, it's basically on his finger. In fact, eventually the guy who he's interviewing sort of like, you know, manages to pry it from him. And then he says to him that, you know, if he, he makes this comment about how the ferret's only playing with him, because if the ferret was serious, it would have basically gnawed through to the bone of his finger.
No!
Yeah. So these, you know, from what I've sort of like said, you can see the obvious danger for a man to have this thing rummaging around in his underwear, basically.
Yeah. You mentioned in the article, you know, not a lot of females go into this, mainly because, you know, there'd be no drama, but more importantly, women are smarter than to put themselves through this kind of stupid competition.
Yeah, exactly. I think there have been sort of like, instances where women have basically done it by putting it down the bra and stuff, you know, but, generally speaking, people don't, you know, it is like a male, you know, dominated, thing, but they do actually sort of, and I mentioned this in the article, there are sort of, you know, world records.
I was about to bring that up.
Yeah.
Now, what's the world record on something like this? So for someone like me, I can imagine doing this for maybe past 5 minutes after the first bite.
Yeah. Yeah. The world record at the last time I sort of looked it up was 5 hours, 30 minutes.
Oh, masochists these people are.
Yeah. I mean, the only thing I can think of, he must have had like sort of quite a tame, you know, animal down there. But even so, it's sort of like, you know, it's sort of having this thing, down there. This has actually been sort of like, you know, done in front of crowds. I mean, I actually mentioned, something where a guy, and I think it was actually in my hometown of Barnsley, basically sort of set to basically, you know, break the world record. God. And he basically sort of like, you know, employed a stage and everything like that for sort of, and, you know, basically stood up there and basically, you know, do this in front of an audience. And the only thing is that people after a bit sort of obviously got bored because, you know, watching a guy with a ferret down his trousers, you know, loses its novelty after about, like, you know, 5-10 minutes, like, you know, so people sort of like, you know, go in, and then people started taking the stage down. So this guy's really sort of like getting upset, like, sort of, oh my, you know, God, sort of, you know, I'm trying to go for a record here, and all these people say, no, we're taking the stage down, and everything, this is pointless and everything, so.
Like you mentioned in the article, there's a big daddy tag match going on.
Yeah. But yeah, you know, it's just, it's one of these things that sort of like, it's a strange custom. No one really knows, you know, where it started. I'm guessing that basically at some point, someone basically in a pub somewhere just sort of like thought it to be a fun idea. But it's featured on television. It's sort of, you know, they've sort of, you know, shown it happening in pubs and that sort of thing. Like, you know, it's just a, who came up with it? God knows and God knows why.
Okay, let's talk the deadly serious sport next. Dazza, we're going to talk darts.
Oh, God, yeah. I mean, we sort of mentioned this a little bit on the last show, but, I mean, darts is something that's, it is a massively popular sport in this country.
You mentioned the article. Well, you know, the English, they've made all these sports over the years, but eventually the rest of the world caught on, got better than us. And eventually, you know, you got sick of, you know, playing all these certain sports that you weren't quite as good as everybody else. But dart was the one that everybody thought, that's kind of a stupid sport, huh? You're like, and then that was the one you guys clung on to, right?
Yeah. I mean, you get sort of like people from Europe who sort of, you know, play and stuff like that, you know, get some European dart players. But generally speaking, it seems to be like this thing, but it's just, this is one of those sports that basically, It was mainly like a pub pastime game that somehow became like a, you know, a television success. It just sort of, you know, it became like a, you know, a really big, and loads of people, you know, as a sport, you know, they get really, really good, television viewings. I mean, it was even like even had like a breakaway dart league when the, in its long history, there was like, you know, it was on sort of like on the terrestrial television. And then you had a breakaway league that they didn't think the sport was being promoted, you know, to its fullest. So all the top players basically left and sort of a bit kind of like, I guess, with the sort of like the, I guess like we sort of, you know, wrestling when people basically went to other promotions and stuff. This sort of breakaway league went to satellite television where it was like, you know, big money to be made. And it does get sort of like, you know, really, really good, good audiences. And the reason why I sort of brought it up was twofold. First of all, there was a TV show in the UK, which was kind of like, ran for, well over a decade. It was called Bullseye. And it was basically a quiz show where you basically, where people basically competed in pairs. So you had one person who was like the, who answered quiz questions. And then the other person was like the dart player. And they were basically, the person who, play the darts would basically throw darts into the board so to determine how much money each, question would be worth and stuff like that. But then the two were basically, you would basically have three teams, and then basically where the program really, you know, got to the thing that people liked is in the second half of this TV show where they were basically, the two people would compete to basically win prizes. So we would have like a sort of makeshift dartboard with each segment on the dartboard representing a certain prize. So they basically like, you know, hit the prize to win it sort of thing. And it was just one of these sort of, you know, shows that everybody watched, you know, everybody absolutely sort of like, you know, adored and everything. It was just like, you know, a real institution for so long. And it was always this like weird thing, because at the end to win like, you know, the top prize, you would basically get the two people would basically throw three darts into the dartboard to get basically score over 100 to win. Rather strangely, and I could never work this out, is that that's quite an attainable score with six darts. I mean, when I was a kid, I used to play darts and I could sort of get, you know, over 100, you know, easy. But for some reason, the person who answered the question was always absolutely terrible at playing darts.
They would get the worst people in the world, right?
Yeah, it was if there's some sort of like, and I guess you could argue with this, but there was some sort of like thing that if you were good at general knowledge, you can't throw darts. It just seemed to be that the person throwing the darts would basically like, you know, throw them as if they'd never thrown a dart before and would just like miss the board and stuff like that. And you think that if you were actually going on a show like Bullseye where you basically just learn how to throw darts at a dartboard, because it's hard to basically sort of score high scores every single go, but it's not that hard to basically be competent at actually throwing the darts into the dartboard and stay there. It's not, you know, I could do it as a kid. You know, you could sort of, you know, and just by chance you can score high scores by it. But for some reason it was just something that it always seemed to be like really be, you know, bad darts players who were basically on the doing the questions. But the other thing that I really sort of thing is a friend bought me for my birthday one year some tickets to go watch the darts in Manchester. Because like I said, it is like a really big, you know, sport. And I love going to live events of any sort. And I went to the darts with her, and it was at the Manchester Arena, which is a massive stadium. And I think we started to sort of get a bit worried when we got there, because we sort of like went in there at about like 6 o'clock or whatever time it was, like, you know, a couple hours before the darts actually start, and there was already people being thrown out for being drunk and disorderly and everything.
And keep in mind, you're no lightweight. You've been to heavy metal shows, you've been to MMA shows, you've been to pro wrestling shows, you've run the gamut of all these kind of, you know, what most people would consider maybe kind of sketchy, kind of, you know, kind of aggressive in nature, kind of these events.
I'm used to a rowdy atmosphere.
So for something like I said, this atmosphere for darts, it would have had to take something certainly special to rattle even you.
Yeah. I mean, I'm not sort of, you know, I've, like saying in the article, I've been to all these events and just basically sort of gone there and enjoy myself. Never felt sort of like in danger any time. I went in there and the atmosphere at first, it was sort of like, oh, it's quite, you know, like lively, but it was like this sort of like this, like just this weird undercurrent behind him that sort of, you know, things were could, it was sort of, you know, quite sort of, they could get sort of like, you know, quite dangerous really fast. I mean, people were basically, people were drunk everywhere. And this is before an even dart had been thrown. I mean, it was just sort of like just insane. And then these like sort of like fights started breaking out all over the arena. Mm-hmm. Just like these, like, you do all of a sudden you just be like, look across and we'd just be like this little pocket of sort of like this brawl breaking out and stuff. and then Buttle start to find that he, I think what part of the problem is that you go to a thing like, if you go to watch the football or boxing or whatever, you can basically, like, you know, wherever you're sat in the stadium, you can basically, even if you're a long way away, I mean, I've been to WrestleMania where we were sort of like, you know, really far up, but, you know, you look down at the ring and you can see what's going on. At darts, you know, a dart board is quite small and the darts are even smaller. So if you're more than, so I would say like 20 feet away from it, you can't really see what's going on.
No, not at all.
And this all takes place on like a big sort of stage that they've got where they have sort of these like pro wrestling type entrances where they have the dart players coming out with this.
For darts, they come out with music.
Yeah, every single one of these dart players comes out with like a hot page three model, as we call them in this country, because in the newspapers always have like models on page three on each arm, which, you know, to rock music, and they give this is insane. They give them all like nicknames.
of course they do.
The power and stuff like that. And then at the top of the, you know, as we're coming in on the TV screens, they'll have like the lookalike, you know, montage. It's a bit like, you know, like the monster truck type things. Yeah. It's sort of like, you know, yeah. Again, it's one of the things you have to up on YouTube. But the thing is, they treat them as these sort of like, you know, really sort of like, you know, great, you know, incredibly sort of like, stars and everything. And these guys come out and they've basically got, they're the fattest athletes you've ever seen.
They're fat and they're balding and they're out of shape. And it's like, yeah, really? All this for these guys that can, throw darts really well?
Yeah. But I mean, the top guy is a guy called Phil Taylor. And his nickname is Phil the Power Taylor. You know, and I mean, but some, you know, from like, you know, the darts players of the past, like, you know, but they were sort of all like, you know, people like, Eric Bristow and Jockey Wilson and stuff like that. These were all sort of, you know, household names. Mm-hmm. You know, they were sort of like, massive, you know, superstars. But like I said, going back to, you know, to the point, you know, when you go to these things, you're pretty much just watching the television screen. Mm. And it just sort of, it was kind of like a thing that, you know, the biggest activity people were doing was basically sort of drinking and stuff. And then bottles started flying and there were fights breaking out and everything. This is when I was sort of like, you know, fortunately the areas I was stood around, was sat in, there was quite like people were okay in this area, but above us were sort of like, you know, rowdy elements. And like, well, this woman who was next to me, she basically got hit in the back of the head with like a half full thing of beer. You know, it was just sort of kind of like not a good atmosphere. And towards the, I mean, nobody was actually paying any attention to the darts. It was just sort of like, you know, fights breaking out everywhere. And then at the final darts, I just sort of got this feeling that, you know, things were going to kick off bad, you know, and when the final dart was thrown and everything was sort of like, everything over, all loads of people in the upper layers basically just took whatever bottle or beer they were drinking out of just threw it right into the air. So everywhere they were just, and because we were like the bottom layer, there was just sort of like, you know, these like, you know, beer and bottles and sort of like, you know, these like, you know, cans and stuff like that, just like dropping it around us. Like, you know, the people from didn't care where they were landing. I mean, but some people brought kids and stuff.
Oh,
you know,
no.
And, you know, so, and some people go in fancy dress and stuff like that. And it was just sort of not. And as we sort of like, you know, went for the exit, I basically got struck. I didn't get struck bad, but I got struck by sort of like a plastic sort of, you know, carton of some sort and that somebody threw at me.
Oh, you got lucky then.
Yeah, it was just like, you know, sort of not. And from what I gather, it sounds like the event that I went to was kind of like, it was one of the ones which was a bit more, things kicked off a bit more worse than what we normally do.
Yeah, that's what you mentioned at the end of the article. You're like, oh, it wasn't as bad as, I think it was Glasgow. It's like, whoa.
Yeah, that's what I heard somebody saying as they were leaving. You know, but apparently somebody else went, we said they've been to, I mean, it wasn't as bad as the experience I had, but it does happen quite a lot. I mean, my dad was talking to somebody at work, and he said that, you know, my son went to the darts the other day, and the guy who was talking to him made a comment. He said, was there any fighting happening? So it's obviously something that it's not unheard of that this thing actually, you know, does happen.
Wow.
Yeah.
For darts!
For darts, yeah, exactly. I mean, it's one of these things that I was actually quite amazed at the size of the crowd that went anyway. Because even when it was at its peak, when I was a kid, it was more of a, it was on television, but it would took place in like, sort of like, you know, small clubs.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so you had like, sort of like, you know, a good like pub type atmosphere. Whereas this was basically just sort of like a recipe for rioting, basically.
Mm, okay.
You know, so put it this way, I won't be going again.
Okay. Speaking of things that are, you know, potentially, you know, deadly to you, let's talk Fred Brewster.
Oh God, this one, yeah. basically back in the 80s, there was, you know, and not to make light of this, but there was basically a disease called AIDS. Mm-hmm. And it became one of these things that from nowhere, it suddenly became like, you know, thought as like the biggest threat, you know, to civilization. I mean, I can't emphasize enough how much of a scare there actually was about AIDS and how much paranoia there about it. You know, it was sort of, they did sort of like a weird marketing campaign on the TV where they would show like sort of like an iceberg. And then they would sort of like, you know, they have this, I think it was John Hurt doing the voiceover talking about sort of like how dangerous this disease was. And then the camera would go underneath and it was like a big, massive, like, iceberg underneath that said AIDS. And it was like,
we're trying to take this seriously because it's a real deadly disease that, you know, inflicts lots of people. But when you have stuff like this, it's hard to take it seriously.
Yeah. It was kind of like, they were sort of scared to actually sort of tackle what it was actually all about. So mm-hmm. we just had these like weird symbolic things. There was another one where they had sort of like because the tagline to it was, AIDS don't die of ignorance. So they had this like thing where somebody was like carving like a black tombstone, and then the tombstone would drop on the floor and it had AIDS written across it. Like, you know, it was just a really bizarre sort of like marketing campaign that was sort of, you know, that they did for the awareness. But one thing that they did do is it allowed for the first time for condoms to be advertised mm-hmm. on UK. Cause before that, condoms weren't actually allowed to be, advertised.
Okay.
So they started basically tried to do them in sort of a light-hearted way. So you would have an advert where a guy would basically go into a shop to buy condoms and he was nervous about buying condoms and everything. And so he had, and eventually he gets up the courage to buy them because he realized it's good for his health. And then the person behind the counter shouts out him to back, "Oh, how much are these condoms?" sort of thing. So they tried to do it like with a bit of humor. But then there was this one which was like creepy as hell. And they had this guy on there, this old guy called Fred Brewster. And it starts with this sort of like Fred Brewster with a message for the, for young people today. And he's basically talking about how sort of condoms can, you know, basically stop sexual diseases and unwanted pregnancies. And then he makes this comment about how, you know, I don't understand why people are so, complain about them today and says, "Look what I had to do." And he gets out this matchbox.
Oh God.
Yeah. Oh. And he opens this matchbox and he's got him what I can't describe as this like this big industrial like tubing. And this is basically, he says, "This is what I had to do." And basically, this is like a reusable condom.
Oh, that's the worst part.
Yeah.
you know, this is like the modern context when people think of condoms, you know, they're disposable, whatever. Use once, you throw them away. No, this guy busts out a reusable one.
Yeah. And he still got it. But I mean, you said that's the worst thing, that it's reusable. It basically describes how he would basically sort of like wash it out and use it again.
I hope he washes it.
Yeah. But the thing is, he actually gave it a name.
Oh.
And he called
it. Here it comes. Here it comes.
Geronimo.
And you know, this isn't a sophisticated, you know, suave, debonair looking kind of guy. No, this guy is, let's see if I can pull his photo up. He's like, he can't be younger than 70.
No.
He just can't. He's bald or balding. He's got these big giant Coke bottle glasses.
And yeah, literally he's got the granddad type jumper on and everything.
Literally the last person you want to hear someone talk about sex from.
Yeah. And he talks about sort of like, you know, how Geronimo, and then at the end of it, he basically makes this comment about, you know, how much trouble it was, but, oh no, but it wouldn't have stopped me. No way, Zodi. It's just like really creepy because I'm sure that in his youth, he was probably like, obviously in his youth, he would have been like, you know, a,
whoa.
Thing. But when you get an old person talking about having sex, you can't imagine it being anything more than what you've got there. You know what I mean? It's just like, you know, it's really creepy. I mean, I have to say, I don't know if the idea was that it would basically put people off having sex. I don't know. But this sort of like, every time I went to use a condom, I'd think of Fred Brewster and like sort of, you know, stop or everything. But yeah, it was just like one of these, it's like really, really weird adverts. One of the things that I was talking to my friends, and we mentioned this, and we got talking to a few memories, and one of the things I'm actually going to do in the future for Britannia is talk about some of the ad campaigns we had in the UK.
Oh God, this should be good. Yeah. I'm sure, because, like I said, we've had our share over here in America of those wacky ads, but I can't imagine what those are like over there.
Yeah. I mean, we used to have something, because in the UK, in the BBC, doesn't actually have ads. It's all basically done by license payer fee. Oh, you know, okay. You get ads on like the independent television stations.
Yeah.
But the one thing you're allowed to, when I was a kid, you were allowed to do on the BBC, you were allowed to make these films called public information films.
Got it.
And the idea was that these were like films which would basically be things like, you know, to help with people's safety. So they'd just be like these little shorts where you'd have stuff like telling kids not to go off with strangers, you know, basically telling people to, you know, prevent themselves from being burgled, that sort of thing. Some of it was like really, really obvious advice, but they make it into an advert. But there was one really famous one as well, where these like, two old women are walking along, and you, they basically get like, you see a guy actually take, you know, steal the purse from them. And then basically it comes up with a tagline, look after your purse before someone else does and stuff like that. But there was one that as a kid really scared the hell out of me. And it was basically, a film to, get kids to stop playing on riverbanks, because there were basically these things where kids would play on riverbanks and like fall in the water and drown and stuff. Mm-hmm. And it had, I don't know if you know, an actor called Donald Pleasance.
Sounds vaguely familiar, yeah.
You would know him if you saw it. Actually, it was in one of the James Bond films as Blofeld. Nice. But he had this like, and he used to do horror films, because he had this like really sort of, like amazing, like, creepy voice, and he basically narrated it, and basically the theme of the advert was deaf walking along the riverbank.
Oh, it's I have it right in front of me, I forget his name. Let's see, he's in the Dr. Loomis, there we go, from the Halloween movie.
Oh yes, that's him.
Yeah,
that's him. He narrated it, and he basically talks about how he's deaf walking along the riverbank. Mm. And he's basically got this like hooded figure walking along the riverbank. And then they'll show you like these scenes of like kids playing, and basically, and inevitably, you know, some of the kids basically fall in the water and drowned and stuff like that. And like basically death walks, you know, amongst them. And as a kid, I mean, and they would show this thing in the daytime. Mm. I mean, it's on YouTube and everything. I know it's there. And I don't even know if you even want to sort of like, you know, find it, just like pull it up if you've got the time, but it's just like one of the creepiest things ever. And it scared the hell out of me as a kid. And of course, as a little kid, I didn't really know what it was actually meant to be doing. Mm-hmm. It just seemed to be just like this like really weird sort of, you know, spooky little, short, but very, you know,
just,
a bit more short.
It was just there just to scare you, right?
Yeah, it was just something that was just like something that was basically put on to scare the hell out of me.
You have no context. You didn't learn anything. You were just terrified.
But a lot of these ads, because you don't really sort of understand, you know, everything that you're seeing on TV when you're a little kid, unless it's sort of cartoons and stuff. So you get these like ads and just like, you know, tell you about how somebody's going to break into your house and stuff like that, and how strangers are going to basically try and kidnap you and stuff like that. And it's just like, it just seems to me that TV was just basically throwing these things up just to scare the hell out of me. But again, that's going to be a future article, because the, particularly the death walking on the riverbank one.
See, we We've been talking about your articles for only a little bit now, for about an hour, and already you have two ideas for two new articles.
Exactly.
Yeah, like you said, I predict you right until the end of time.
I'm sure I will be.
And I even think, you know, our mutual friend Alex, he's shown these to his mother, and his mother's English, and she's like, these can't be real.
Yeah. But yeah, but they are. Yeah. Every single one of these is 100% real.
All right, let's wrap this up with the final one, Bonfire Night. Now, what is that exactly, Dazza?
Okay, bonfire. I mean, out of all of them, this is the one which is the I would say it's the one that basically everybody in the country takes part on. it takes part on the 5th of November.
Year. That sounds familiar, Dazza. Now, what's significant about that date?
The 5th of November?
Yes. I seem to remember something about it.
Oh, do you mean the rhyme?
Yes. That's what I was thinking at.
Right. Okay. Yeah. There is a rhyme, which is, remember the 5th of November. That is how you sort of, you know, remember when Bonfire Night is. And Bonfire Night is basically, it's a, back in the 1600s, a guy by the name of Guy Fawkes tried to blow up the Houses of Parliament. And he basically, you know, failed in this attempt. He was captured and he was basically summarily executed. He was what they call hung, drawn, and quartered, which is basically, and he was, and he was basically his body. He was basically sort of, his body parts were apparently tied to horses and basically paraded through the streets of London as the as benefits the you know the a traitor, and it became a tradition that every year that an effigy of the. Of Guy Fawkes would be burned, and where we are now is the on the 5th of November. The tradition is the people basically get together and build in the weeks ahead, build a bonfire. So they basically get all the old wood and rubbish and everything, and basically sort of build like, you know, a big pile of all this stuff. And a lot of people now go to like these organized displays. So what you get, when I was a kid, you used to basically just have it in your garden. Everyone would have a bonfire in the garden.
Well, that can't be dangerous.
Oh no, not at all. Nowadays, some people still make their own bonfire, but a lot of people will go to like an actual display where they build an absolutely massive bonfire. Wow. an absolutely massive one. And in the weeks before, kids will basically build a Guy Fawkes. Mm-hmm. So the way to build it is basically you get like, well, you know, lots of paper and stuff bags and everything, and get some of your dad's old clothes, and you make your own little sort of Guy Fawkes effigy. And the tradition as well is that you basically, some kids basically, They take the Guy Fawkes out and basically stand in a street corner, and they'll basically say to passers-by, "Penny for the guy," and so if you want to, you basically give them 5p or something like that they basically can, you know, collect up and go buy sweets with and something like that. And then on the night of November 5th, you basically put the Guy Fawkes on top of the bonfire. And then you set the whole thing on fire. so it's kind of like a big Wicker Man. And it's also got like a bit of a 4th of July type feel to it, because we basically, it's our night of the year when we basically have firework displays.
Yeah, you said they since then sort of kind of tampered it down. It's no longer in homes. There's a public display, and that, you know, what most people will do, they'll get fireworks as far as the display, and then the kids will have the little sparklers.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it used to be that, I mean, people still buy like the fireworks for the home and stuff, and we'll set them off. But generally speaking, most people will go to an actual proper display, partly because it's safer, but also because it's a lot more spectacular. So because when I was a kid, we always used to buy like a box of fireworks, which were basically these, like, you know, just little sort of display things, but which were still, you know, real, real dangerous. I mean, there was always something that when we would set these fireworks off, one of them would basically malfunction and misfire. But one thing that you, because they all have different names, like traffic lights, which basically fire like, you know, different colours of the traffic lights up in the air and stuff. And there's one called a Caffeine Wheel, which you basically nail into a wall and then set it going and it spins round. So it basically sends like, you know, fire everywhere. And that was always one that basically would come off the nail that you'd nailed it to. So it would start spinning around the garden and chasing everybody and stuff. And then you'd have the ones which would fire in the wrong direction and stuff. So they were really sort of, you know, dangerous, these things. And you have you had rockets as well, which would stick in a milk bottle or a fire up into the air and it would explode. But nowadays, you know, they tend to basically try and get people to basically go to like organized displays for safety and everything, but it's still got that kind of weird Wicker Man type feel to it. You know what I mean?
That's actually a proper analogy now that I think about it. The Wicker Man. Yeah.
You know, and it is really weird because when everyone basically just stands around the fire and watches it burn and everything like that. And there's like traditional food that you have there. Like people have like pie and mushy peas. There's a special kind of toffee called bonfire toffee and stuff, which is like really, really sugary and stuff.
Go all out for it.
Yeah. Oh, and there's also, toffee apples is another traditional thing there, where you basically get an apple on like a lollipop stick, which is being dunked in toffee and hardened.
Oh, okay.
You know, it's actually quite, you know, nice. So you're getting like sort of like, you know, healthy fruit and like sugary toffee all in one, like, you know. So there is kind of like a lot of tradition to all this, like, you know, traditional food and everything. But it's sort of, it's just, you know, it's kind of like our 4th of July.
Okay. Seems fitting.
Yeah, in that it's basically like, you know, lots of fireworks and everything and lots of bonfire and stuff. And but generally speaking, at these events, the tradition as well as is when the guy, you know, because you basically set it fire up for bottom of the fire slowly gets up. That people start, when actually, when they see that the guy actually start to burn, people start to cheer.
See, that's one of those things we don't really know too much about. I mean, obviously, there's that graphic novel, V for Vendetta. So we just assume we've seen the story from one point of view and we just assume, oh, it's whatever. It's the, maybe he's an English folk hero. No. In fact, the opposite's true. They specifically have a day dedicated to burning him in effigy.
Yeah. I mean, that's the V for Vendetta, the mask and everything and the outfit that he wear is basically based on Guy Fawkes. And that is the actual, you know, because in the V for Vendetta, he is basically like an anti-government anarchist, which is what Guy Fawkes was, or it was more to do with religion. It was basically, it was to do with the Catholic Church, basically at the time they wanted to install like a Catholic monarch. And so they wanted to basically sort of, you know, bring about an end to parliament, you know, blow up parliament, and that would start a Catholic-inspired revolution and everything.
Okay.
And, you know, it does get sort of taught in schools. I mean, I do remember as a kid as well, we sort of, one year we sort of all drew like sort of our pictures of like, you know, Guy Fawkes burning and stuff like that. And some people.
wonderful, for children.
Yeah. Yeah. And some people actually drew the horses. You know, dragging the body parts through you know what kids are like, they'll sort of go through the most gruesome bits. So they do like the body parts of him sort of like, you know, being, you know, pulled through the square, through the streets of London and everything like that. So, lovely. Yeah.
Just lovely. So,
yeah, just the lovely little, you know, things. But yeah, but that is, you know, the 5th of November for you.
Yes, and that's what you've written on your Full Britannia articles so far. I imagine not only, you know, you writing these articles is going to become sort of a traditional thing. I have to imagine, you know, we're going to keep doing shows on the, like this in the future. So,
if we build up some more, we'll be able to, like, you know, come up with these things. Now, if anybody sort of listening sort of like as their own, but this idea, because I'm finding this stuff out over time. These are like kind of just scratching the surface. These are kind of like the ones which are sort of, you know, well known. But then I'm sort of, as I sort of like going to these, I sort of like, you know, find out these other ones which I've sort of like, you know, never. I mean, the Twile Flunking or whatever it was called, that was something I'd, you know, never heard of. You know, but, you know, there's sort of all these, you know, others that sort of, the potential is there to do more articles.
Like I said, if you like Daza said, if you have any like suggestions or you have any of your own particular, you know, wacky stories to tell, down in the description should be my email. So feel free to send those to me and I'll be sure to make Daza, I'll make sure Daza gets those.
Yeah. If you want to put my Twitter on there as well.
Oh, okay. Awesome. I'll be sure to put that as well.
Yeah. And people, you know, if anyone's listening, they want to try, you know, give a little, you know, a bit of feedback on, you know, on their own, so to, you know, memories of these things or any of these other sports, that sort of thing. But yeah, but definitely the ones which I'm going to be doing, so I'll probably have to do Morris Dancing, I mentioned it, but I'll definitely be doing the, some of the weirder ads. And if anyone's ever got sort of any of those that they want to sort of, you know, suggest or remember by, you know, feel free.
All right. Let's talk about what our next show is going to be about. Now, we sort of teased it last time, and then it's sort of our discussion of it naturally led to us, you know, this show coming about. But initially, we were supposed to do a show based on the Marvel movies, which we're still going to do, and we're going to try to fit it all in 1 week, but we're not making any promises, but we're going to try to fit these two shows in 1 week. So this show, and then presumably, hopefully within the same week, we'll also do the show concerning all the Marvel movies.
Yeah, and but yeah, this is basically, yeah, this is going to be like the actual, the Marvel specific. So basically I would say starting with Iron Man, which was the first one, and then going up to the, you know, the present day, basically the ones which are in the, what we call the official Marvel Universe movies.
So I'd say every movie from Iron Man to, what was the latest one, Ant-Man?
Yeah, it will be, won't it?
Yeah,
yeah, because the next one will be Winter Soldier. So yeah, so everything up to between Iron Man and Ant Man.
Okay. Did you want to talk? Since we're talking about that cinematic universe and whatnot, did you want to include the Netflix series, or are we just going to focus primarily on the movies?
Well, we could mention that as well, because there's only so far there's only the two of them, isn't there?
Yeah. So
Daredevil and Jessica Jones. So we can fit those in as well. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. And after that, just to article wise, I've apart from all the Fool Britannia ones, which are sort of, you know, worth looking at, because I go into more detail and you know, with some like sort of, you know, a few jokes and everything here and there. So, but worth reading. But there's also another article I've just complete, which should be coming up soon, which will basically I write wrestling pieces from time to time.
Ooh, nice.
I've got a real interest in Japanese, particularly Japanese women's wrestling, and I did a piece on Akira Hokuto versus Shinobi Kandori, which is probably my favorite match of all time, an excellent match. But I've also just done a piece which is basically should come up sometime, I would think sometime after weekend, which is about Chigusa Nagao versus Dump Matsumoto, the first hair versus hair match.
Ooh, I'm looking forward to reading about that.
Yeah, so which was a cracking encounter, basically. So yeah, so that will be coming up soon as well.
All right, so you know, a lot of stuff to look forward to. You know, our next Marvel movie show, and then Daz's article on Japanese women's pro wrestling.
Mm-hmm.
Awesome.
Yeah, and that's kind of going to be a thing going forward as well, the Japanese wrestling. It's probably not going to get that, probably not going to be that regular, but I would say I'll probably do one like every few months or so, you know, just to sort of like, you know, some of my favorite matches and some of the ones to really, you know, because there's a lot of good stuff from that era.
Okay. I think that's going to do it for this week's, this show for today.
Okay.
All right. So from all of us at halfcarded.com, thanks for checking out this week's show, or actually this show specifically, and see you next time. Bye.
Bye.
The end is near, and so I face the final curtain. You can't, I'm not the queer. I'll state my case, of which I'm certain. I've lived a life that's full, with each and every highway and much more than this, I did my